Hello and welcome to a brand new No, the Power's Not Out of My House 5 Heart Podcast, brought to you by Coronation.com, part of the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm back. It's been 11 years, it feels like, since I've sat in this chair and talked with this guy. Anyway, I'm Greg Mahochko, but man, our founder and fearless leader is here, as always. He is the stable force of Corn Nation, the glue that holds us all together. He is the syrup on our pancakes, John Damn Justin.
Okay.
John, since I went there, what's the best part of pancakes for you?
I was all prepared to be asked, how are you doing? You come up with this freaking pancake thing. What the hell, man?
Well, it's a natural segue into, we can talk about the gentleman who had to spend, 17 hours or whatever in a Waffle House.
Oh, God, why would anybody do that? They lost my favorite part of the pancakes. You know, here's the thing with me and food. I enjoy good food, but I have to eat it because my body requires it for sustenance. I don't like get all excited about it much anymore because right now I'm trying to figure out the best way that I can be the most healthy with the most energy and keep my my brain injury from overwhelming me with headache. So I am experimenting on my own diet, and that involves different types of proteins, and I should be having more smoothies with things and chia seeds and hemp seeds. And this sounds terrible, doesn't it?
No, it's fine.
This is what you ask me how I am.
How are you?
That was so hard.
That's what she said.
I am so mentally fried that I might as well be drunk and stoned out of my mind. The last 2 days I've had severe server crashes at an organization that have taken – that I repaired. Me, I did. But they exhausted me because the stress was so high, and I don't do that well with this stuff. So I'm going to just switch to a different accent so I don't sound like so much of a drunk person slurring my words. It'll just be naturally slurring with how I'm talking.
I'm really excited because you gave up drinking last year. So this might be like the closest we've had to like old John in a while.
You mean where I can't remember anything I just said?
No, when you just get well, I was going to say when you get really hostile, but that's, you know, that's just a Wednesday.
That is true. That is true.
So
I'm not really hostile with my colleagues.
You've got to.
Well, I did. Yes, I did. We were on Zoom calls sometimes, and I at one point I got up and I walked outside so they couldn't hear me, and I swore a lot, and then I came back in and I was fine.
I feel like you being hostile in Zoom calls is just that should be on the bottom of your business card, whether it's your day job or the website. John Johnston, I'm hostile on Zoom calls.
Well, the one guy had this, like, he's sitting in his home office, right? And he has a window beside him, and there's a long tube leading up to the window. And I said, hey, what the hell are you doing with that tube thing? Are you going to attach your car to a hose, you know, your car muffler to a hose and into your window, or what the hell, man? And the other people on the Zoom call thought I was a little rude with that. And I just thought, it was kind of a joke. Okay. What else is going on?
Was it a hamster tube? I feel like it probably was a hamster tube.
No, it was apparently a single room air conditioner where you put it, instead of putting the air conditioner in the window, yeah, like the old trailer houses you used to live in.
I had one of those window unit air conditioners, sir, and it was in an apartment, not in a trailer. Thank you. How dare you?
So,
can we talk,
you know,
about
that reminds me of a story. Do you want a story about trailers?
Hell yeah. I am really debating on like turning the light on because I feel like I'm weirding people out. But when I turn the light on,
it's okay.
Okay.
It's okay, because then you'll be just white and ghosty.
We do need to explain why, due to what is usually abysmal It's regularly bad, but this week the lighting was particularly abysmal, and it looked like I was just all white with a couple little dark dots in my goatee, and John was creeped out. So we decided to make it less creepy by turning out the lights.
You can put a flashlight up next to your head. Okay, so years ago I was working with this school district, and we were at this banquet, and this woman explained that she had moved from, I think, South Carolina or North Carolina. That's kind of weird. And she had moved from North Carolina and South Carolina, and I asked, what did you do there? And she said she worked for a real estate company. And I said, oh, really? And what did you do? And she goes, well, I was the one that usually took the calls from people that wanted to sell their house. And I said, well, what was your biggest challenge in your job? Because, you know, I'm a good interviewer, even in real life. And she looked at me and she says, well, the hardest part was to figure out whether they were actually talking about a house or a mobile home. I said, they didn't know the difference. And she goes, no, normally what I had to do is ask them, does your house have axles? did your house get to its location by being driven down the highway? And that was something real that happened. Okay, what are we going? What are we doing? What are we talking about?
I'm glad you asked. I want to save. Well, let's just jump into it, John. Did you know that Taylor Martinez was out at the College World Series this weekend?
I saw that he was out at the College World Series.
That is impressive.
I hear that he's their starting quarterback again this fall.
That's right. Of course, a little tongue-in-cheek. If you don't know, ESPN erroneously, good word, said Husker quarterback Taylor Martinez was actually Adrian Martinez. And Adrian saw the tweet, quoted it, whatever, and quickly deleted it. But he said, well, I guess my name's Taylor now. So he was in on the joke. I don't think he took it too seriously, but
I mean, you gotta, that guy can't take anything seriously. I mean, we beat him up so much over the past 3 years.
Yeah.
I suppose a lot of people would say rightfully so, but yeah, I can't imagine what it'd be like to be 20 years old, be the starting quarterback of the Nebraska Cornhuskers, and put up with, you know, seeing your name in the paper and your name on the radio and, you know, and I've been dealing with all this stuff, and then have a team that's not really the best around you either. So I guess he's got a hell of a mental constitution. I'll say that for him. And I hope he comes out this fall and has like a Heisman year.
He's due. You know, I think there were a lot of expectations his second year, you know, when he was preseason Heisman candidate, you know, things like that. And I don't want to say that his legacy is tied with Scott Frost or vice versa, but they've both been bit, you know, in their careers at Nebraska by some unfortunate circumstances. You know, even on Adrian's side, yeah, he didn't have that career opening game against Akron or whatever. But in his first career game against Colorado, they wrench his knee and he misses a bunch of time. Gets injured in the second season, in his sophomore season, and then at his third season, you know, his I guess consistency, his play declines a little bit. He gets actually benched for Luke McCaffrey, and then, you know, they switch places the next week. So and that of course was a shortened season due to the pandemic. So I'm really hoping that in year four, for both men, you know, obviously Adrian and Scott, that everything gets, it all comes together. You know, I think there was recent a quote from the receivers coach saying that, you know, the receiving room is chock full, and we just had a commit here in the last couple of days from, I believe, Colorado Springs. Forgive me, I don't recall the name, but he plays, you know, in high school. You see it obviously more often than in college, where he plays, I think, receiver and defensive back. And probably going to be, when he gets on campus, probably going to be on the defensive side of the ball, because that, depending on what happens between now and a year from now, attrition and things like that. But that there is a ton of talent in that receiver's room. And I guess, you know, the kid from Montana might be he might be a one and done type of year. You know, so
Amore Toure.
Thank you. So there will be some spots, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's stacked. And so I'm hoping that everything comes together for the offense, this year, kind of like I think a lot of people would agree it did for the defense, last year.
Well, it damn well better come together in some way, shape, or form this year, because, you know, I did this article today that, is Nebraska football fan interested at an all-time low? And we got a lot of comments. We got them on Twitter, and we got a lot of comments on the article on the website.
There were some on Facebook I was going to bring that article up, John. That was a great off-season topic, you know, that's relevant. Consensus based on what you saw, some of the feedback?
I'd say there's two things. I'd say people are really in wait-and-see mode. I mean, in the past, it was always interesting that we'd have all these off-season articles where people were, you know, the excited. We have the best players ever. You know, coaches always say that shit because they have to. But I think people in the last years, they drank the Kool-Aid. They, you know, Scott Frost came in and everybody expected big things right away, and we didn't have big things right away. And I think people are pretty much just like, you know what? I'll watch. I'm not going to not watch, but I'm not going to care either. There were so many people that said, I'm not going to let it ruin my day anymore.
Yeah.
And if they're losing and they're playing badly, I'm just going to shut it off and go do something else. When I don't think you'd see that at all in the past. So
no, I don't. And
he needs to, we got to fuck the bowl game shit. Okay. We got to go to a bowl game. That should be like the minimum requirement for survival.
Right.
And I'm not talking about surviving, firing Scott Foss. What I'm talking about, survival of the fan base that gives a shit at all. You know, if you get to a bowl game and it's like the Music City Bowl, whoop the fucking do. That's what you're expected to do, at least. He needs, because the problem isn't us. The problem isn't you and me, and the problem isn't coordination. Problem is a lot of people in Nebraska rely on this stuff.
Sure.
You know, you got the media out there trying to sell papers or whatever they sell now. You got people trying to sell beer and bars, and they don't want it to be sad beer. It's more fun when it's happy beer.
Of course it is, yeah.
Right? You got guys selling T-shirts and balloons and all this stuff. And you hate to put all this stuff on Scott Frost, but he gets paid $5-7 million a year. That's what he signed up for. So get your ass in gear and start winning games. Figure out how to win a game in June. You got 3 or 4 days left, you son of a bitch.
Do you think that in a place like Nebraska or in Alabama, I'm trying to think where else, where the college team is, and Alabama's, you know, they've got two. They've got Auburn, of course, as well. But where college football is the game in town. I'm trying to think of other places right now off the top of my head. It's not, you know, I can't say Georgia. I can't say Ohio State. You know, but, you know, you could be like Mississippi State or, you know, places like that where do you think that when a coach, like I'll use Scott Frost, when he took that job, and obviously we've talked for, I have no idea what I just pressed, for a couple of years about not recognizing or not knowing the lows of the low where the program was after 3 years of Mike Riley. Do you think that he was just taking in his mind? Do you think that he thought he was just taking a football job, or do you think because of his, you know, the hometown boy status, the national champion quarterback status, the lifeblood of the state, do you think that he recognized the bigger impact of his role on the state, you know, mental state?
He was well aware of it.
But do you think do you think
he was hated when he left for Stanford? Mm-hmm. Hated. And he was booed when he came back to Nebraska. And he basically proved, I mean, I don't think there's a guy that understands what that means more than anybody else in, on this whole planet.
No, but do you think it, in his consideration of taking the job or not taking the job, do you think he was thinking about the local economy at the Haymarket or the guy selling, you know, shirts and or beers? So it is a lot to, you know, weigh on him. And you know, there's always been that talk. I mean, I'm considerably younger than you, but there's always that talk about, you know, like the president of the United States on Inauguration Day versus like the end of their 4 years or 8 years and how it ages them. But you can see, like, Scott, I mean, he's still like he's a lot better shape than me. Not you, John, because you're built out of God fashioned you out of marble and granite itself. But certainly he's in better shape than me. But you can see it, it's aging him a little bit in the face, I think.
Was there a question there? My God, man.
What's the consensus of the family? No, it did. I saw some of those reactions as well, and some of them were wait and see. Some of them were like not less interested, more frustrated, you know? But I've been saying this, and I don't hate bringing him up, but I hate bringing up the circumstances of, you know, like when we lost Brian, and I've said it before that, you know, like there's more to life than football. Yes, even in Nebraska, but if it's an 11 o'clock game and it's a rolling turd, then I can't let that outcome of that game affect, you know, how I am the rest of the day, the weekend, things like that, because that's not fair to him. Or my wife, obviously. But so, speak of the devil, literally.
You need to grow up. They need to grow up traumatized by something. For God's sakes, how are they going to live through it? How are they going to get through life if you don't experience some kinds of trauma and fight your way through it?
Go back and watch a cartoon.
No.
Yes. No. Or you can go to bed.
No.
Oh, get out. I told you.
Wow.
Go. I'm going to have to shut this whole thing down if you don't go back. We'll turn off all your cartoons. You know, I'm going to have to – you're giving me more work because I have to edit all of this out now. I don't have the energy to edit all that out, John. All right.
It's okay. It's okay. Our listenership is pretty bad right now because nobody cared.
That gets us back to the topic.
I will say this. I'm going to do a YouTube video. I have some YouTube videos I'd like to get to when I'm not completely freaking fried out of my gourd by people blowing shit up. But one of those videos is, should coaches ever come home to coach? And I think that if, you know, you always see these guys like, I'd love to go back to my alma mater. What are you, the dumbest shit alive? You know, I get it. Would it be special? I imagine that for Dave Van Horn at Arkansas, it's pretty special to be coaching the Arkansas Razorbacks. Probably not, you know, low kind of not a high profile. It is an Arkansas baseball. It is a big deal to those people, but it's not football. You know, it's not like drive up to your house and your car's on fire type shit. What happens in football sometimes? That's a metaphor.
So that's great content. You know, 'cause you got the Scott Frost, the Jim Harbaugh is the same situation. High expectations because of, you know, certainly what he did at Stanford as well as what he did with, you know, the 49ers and leading them to a Super Bowl. It just hasn't clicked in Ann Arbor. And I'm fine with that because I don't care for Michigan or, Jim Harbaugh. The only time.
Let's be honest. Jim Harbaugh is a pretty good coach. I mean, he has had good football teams. He just hasn't beat Ohio State. You know, and he loses to Michigan State. He loses to the teams you can't lose to and make everybody happy. Otherwise, Jim Harbaugh, even he's kind of a flaky guy. Nobody would give a shit. If you beat Ohio State one time in the next 3 years, nobody would give it. All the Jim Harbaugh is a flaky guy shit would just be washed down in the bathwater and pulled the drain and it's gone. Well, at least for a while.
You know, other coaches who went home, in a sense, old Bo Pelini at Youngstown State. Cardinal Mooney right there in Youngstown, Ohio. Now, he didn't play his college ball there, but he's from there. And we all know how that went.
Yep.
So,
but yeah. I think the thing, the gist of it is this: when you come home, you don't know, you have a lot of baggage you carry with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do this. I swear a lot, but I'm going to use a biblical reference. What happened to Jesus Christ when he came back to his hometown?
Oh,
because
yeah.
that's always what I think about when I think about people going home to do something. I think that Jesus Christ was not accepted as a savior or Messiah in his own hometown. Why? Because the people knew him and they looked at him and said, "You can't be that great. We knew you as a little kid," which kind of implicates he was a hellion. I'm sure you could have long arguments about that. And yeah, I could do it even being not stoned or drunk.
I don't want to call it a proverb or a cliche, but there's definitely that statement of, prophets can't do their thing in their hometown. You know, Jesus, obviously, but Old Testament guys as well. So, yeah, you always run out of your hometown eventually. We hope that it doesn't happen for Scott Frost. We really do.
You carry your baggage.
Yeah.
You bring baggage with you, and it's also there for you when you get there.
Yeah.
So I think Scott Frost is taking him extra time. Yeah, because he's got to work through a lot of this baggage. He also has a 7-year contract. Doesn't matter if he's successful in the first 3 years. If he doesn't get what he wants out of it. I mean, there were a lot of times we did this podcast with Cameron Jurgens, especially during the 220 season, where I said he's looking at he's playing these games like it's a practice.
Mm-hmm.
Where he just is letting Cameron Jurgens make mistakes.
Right.
And he knows he doesn't have to win games right now, but Cam Jurgens is screwing up and screwing up and screwing up. And you're going to have to get through a certain amount of screw up before you become really good. And that is one guy that this team really, you know, I think that if you go back on wait on Adrian Martinez, which is what we started with, wait on Scott Frost. There's got to be a shit ton of weight on Cam Jurgens too, because the first snaps of the season and he gets them, if they're flying up in the air, the TVs are going to be turning off all over the place. People are just going to go, "I'm not watching this shit over again."
So I know you don't have a crystal ball, John, but if you had to, if you had $100 that you had to give to a bookie, like you have to, there's no way around it. Do you say that Jurgens sails the struggles out of the gate in that first game, or against Illinois, or do you think he's got it under control? I say he's got it under control.
So do I. I think we're going to beat the living shit out of Illinois.
Oh, I hope so. We got a lot of time to prepare for that one.
I'm a homer, so you know this is how I have to live.
Hey, no, that's perfect.
Like I wrote in the article, eternally optimistic and always disappointed.
John, I'm touched that you finally chose the light, the positive side, because for a long time you were just coming on here, you were angry. And 2020 was the year that you were supposed to be positive, and then March of 2020 happened, and
well, I quit drinking, Greg. What do you want from me?
You're much happier now, I'll say
that. Am I?
Yeah, grain of salt. Well, let's move up the road 45 minutes from Lincoln to Omaha, where the College World Series is taking place, and it's going to a decisive Friday night game, and that will be Vanderbilt and that other team. Vanderbilt scores two in the bottom of the ninth to tie and then take the lead on a I don't know if it was bases loaded, but I think it was bases loaded wild pitch, and the guy scores standing up, which shows me two things. That's a very deep backstop. Thank you. I was like, backboard. That's not right. That's a different sport. But that's a very deep backstop, and Vanderbilt's going to win this thing.
I have not paid one single day. I don't even know what's going on in the College World Series. Do you know why, Craig?
Because Nebraska's not in it.
No, I'm not there either.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was upset. Well, I was really upset by it last year, but this year I was kind of like, shit, because they weren't giving many credentials out. So I decided I wouldn't even try. You let other people have that place. So is it down to nothing? I mean, it's down to Vandy and them shit balls from Texas.
Yeah. I say that purely out of speculation because I haven't been following it either. I just saw the clip as it got shared in our Slack chat room last night, and I said, well, that's it. One way to win a game when everything's on the line. Two outs, and I think they were two outs and maybe one or two on when Vanderbilt started their little rally, so props to them. As far as SEC teams go, I think I dislike Vanderbilt the least, so if they were to take the crown, I'd be okay with it. Go Doors. Go Commodores. Now, what I like to see was that there were a fair amount of folks in the stands for college baseball, so I feel like we're getting there. You know, we're
some of my friends in Omaha posted photos along with the rejoicing that they were able to go back to the College World Series. So, you know, I'm glad that they're having fun.
and you're cursing them under your breath.
But I wasn't there.
It's like, I'm really glad they're having a fun time. I'm for working.
Good job of getting out with a crowd, you fucking bastard.
Hope you had a premium parking spot. So wouldn't that have been one to like try to sneak out at the eighth inning? beat the rush.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
So let's talk about we're already going probably farther than we wanted to go, and so this will be our last topic of the week, and that is the United States Supreme Court ruled kind of against the old NCAA this week, John, in regards to amateurism in college athletics. Pretty landmark decision, honestly.
It destroys college football as we know it, just like name, image, and likeness. Mm-hmm. College football will never be the same and not worth watching, so I don't know why we bother. Maybe we should just shut down the podcast and never do it again. Screw everything. Anyway, I do think it's going to be, you know, I mean, it was 9-0. You know, it was unanimous, and they did. Justice Kavanaugh issued some things about the NCAA where he stomped them into the ground.
Can we just talk about that real quick? I mean, talk about unification. Who would have thought that it was the outdated, backhanded dealings of the NCAA that would get justices with two different letters behind their names? Because, you know, or at least let's rephrase, with two different letters behind the names of people who appoint them to these positions to come together in unity to strike down the NCAA with God's vengeful hammer.
You know what's happened my entire life?
What?
One consistent thing that has happened with regards to the Supreme Court. Every time there's a new Supreme Court justice up to be picked and be ratified or whatever the hell they do with Supreme Court justice, the screaming, literally since I have been a teenager and been able to remember any of this shit, has been, this is the end of democracy if that guy gets elected. This guy is going to overturn Roe versus Wade. This guy is going to take away our guns. This guy's going to, the world's going to end if this guy gets elected to the Supreme Court. And then the guy gets elected to the Supreme Court, and we really, nothing happens because they're judges. They're not politicians. They're judges. That's what they do. They interpret the law, especially at the highest level in the land.
Yeah.
But it amazes me that we constantly, if you're my age and you don't recognize that this is what we do every time with the Supreme Court justice, And you get up, you set your hair on fire and shit your pants and run around screaming. You're kind of a dumb person. They did. They came unanimously, and it is going to be a big, huge
pendulum
swing. It's going to have a huge. Now, here is the NCAA statement. While today's decision preserves the lower court ruling, it also affirms the NCAA's authority to adopt reasonable rules and repeatedly notes that the NCAA remains free to articulate what are and what are not truly educational benefits consistent with the NCAA's mission to support student athletes. Even though the decision does not directly address name, image, and likeness, the NCAA remains committed to supporting nil benefits for students. Additionally, we remain committed to working with Congress to chart a path forward, which is a point the Supreme Court expressly stated in its ruling. And it's not that it, oh, that's Mark Emmert, the guy that got his contract renewed.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
yeah.
a few things about this. Number one, he brings up Congress. Why does he bring up Congress? Because he knows those shitballs are going to take forever to do anything. We are 1 week away, one day over from Nebraska's nil law going into effect, which means that athletes could start doing making money off name, image, and likeness on July 1st. They probably won't do that because the NCAA hasn't moved an inch. And they won't do that because Congress moving an inch for them takes them some kind of monumental. Well, I guess it takes us shit tons of money flowing into them before they'll do anything. So basically, Mark Emmert says, we're not doing shit until Congress does. And he knows that'll take forever. So really, does this crush student athlete, you know, the student athlete concept? Yeah, it kind of does. Does it crush amateurism as we know it? Yeah, it kind of does. What happens next? Not a damn thing, because these are bureaucrats and it takes them forever to pee. I don't know. So
let's talk about that real quick, because now that you laid it out the way you did, you know, Nebraska's unicameral voted for in favor of NIL. Obviously, you mentioned July 1st, which we're coming up on, you know, a week from now. California, I think, has also set some wheels in motion for NIL out there. I don't know if there are other states. There might be. It doesn't matter. But to your point,
it's like 18 of them.
Okay, well, all right, and 16 and 16 other states or 18, whatever. But to your point, the way the NCAA moves and the way Washington moves, because there's a lot of bureaucratic red tape. Do you think that all these states are? I'm going to try to do this in a gross generalization, so I apologize. I do think that at least some of them or some of the state legislators have some genuine you know, thoughts and feelings and reasons behind things. But when you can say, well, Nebraska, California, 18 other states, whatever it is, we're, you know, here in Nebraska, we love NIL, but it's those shitbags in the NCAA who are working with those even bigger bags in Washington that, you know, that's, we can only do so much. We're ready as soon as they're ready. Come on to Lincoln or come on to USC or something like that. You know, do you think it's a gimmick? Or, you know, to like a bigger bubble, like recruiting gimmick? Or do you think that, you know, there's some sincerity behind it as far as getting these kids paid?
Well, I think that if you're in a state that doesn't have a nil law and you expect to actually recruit athletes, you better get your ass moving because other people are. So, I mean,
you already got Bagman.
Like,
so
it's kind of like, people always point out, well, Nebraska had the strength advantage for a long time. Okay, what's your next advantage going to be? It's going to be understanding how to execute this properly. And Nebraska's way ahead of everybody else on this. So if you're one of those states that's sitting around and doesn't think it's important, well, get caught behind the curve. Maybe you don't give a shit about college athletics. I don't know. But I think the thing is really when you look at this, we've done this for 100 years now, where we've had college athletes that have never been paid. And right. Now there's tons of money in this. And yes, they get compensated with a free tuition, although not all of them do. And that's a cop out for a lot of people. As Todd likes to bring up, baseball players, a lot of those don't get full scholarships. In fact, most of the athletes on other teams besides men's football and basketball don't get full ride scholarships at all. So in Lexi's son keeps coming up in this for me because and she should, because Nebraska volleyball is a special sport. We support the hell out of it. They're excellent. And Lexi's son is a walking goddess. And if there's anybody that could make a shit ton of money off her name, image, and likeness as a college athlete, it is Lexi's son and Lauren Stiverns. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about Michaela Fecky. If they'd have been able to sell T-shirts saying "You got Fecky," I'd buy that. I'd buy that in a heartbeat. Right?
Yeah.
So it's not just about football. And yeah, I think it is. My favorite phrase lately has been, there's nothing so powerful as the idea whose time has come. And this idea's time has come.
Nice.
And the only problem with executing it is people like Mark Emmert, they're just going to sit on their ass because that's their job, is to sit on their ass. And people in Congress who sit on their ass because they don't move until somebody pays them to move. It's not we should help people. They yeah. say that, but they're full of shit.
I want to add another famous quote on with yours. It's something along the lines of, you know, the most dangerous phrase in the English language is, and then this quote, it's, well, that's the way it's always been done. You know, and that was, I might get this wrong, but I'm pretty sure I got it right. Rear Admiral Grace Hopper. So, and she was instrumental in computers, as we know. You probably knew that, John, with all of the work you do in technology. Now, here's the question. You're probably impressed that I knew that.
No.
Oh. Thanks, buddy.
I'm not done ranting about this NCAA nil Supreme Court justice shit yet.
And to your point,
I want to point something out, Greg.
I do too. Mine's much shorter.
What? Mine, go ahead.
You talked about the special, you know, the uniqueness of Nebraska volleyball. And that's self-sustaining. One of the few women's college athletic programs in the country that, you know, pays its own way, essentially. You know, they're not one of those that they're not on the ledger book of the football or men's basketball program. They make money.
They recently came out with and are moving forward with a 12-team college playoff format, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the college football playoff committee. The NCAA does not own the college football playoff. But the college football playoff people, they're coming up with, hey, we want to get away from the 4-team thing and we want to expand to 12. Now, these guys are looking at in relative fast terms when it comes to bureaucracy. And why are they doing this? Why is Congress sitting there doing nothing? Why is Mark Emmert and the NCAA doing nothing? But these guys who run the college football playoff committee are moving like, that's exactly it. They're moving like they got to get to the bathroom before they poop their pants. Why? Because they're carrying bags of money. They will have bags of money they can carry to the bank.
Yep.
Literally just put in their car, cash, big hefty bags, and not even care about the bills that fall out on the way there. That's why they're moving.
Yeah.
If Mark Emmert looked at this and said, well, if we pass nil, the NCAA will get another $4 billion a year and I'll get another $1 million salary, that son of a bitch would pass this tomorrow. So, you know, do we care about student athletes and their welfare? Blah, 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 whatever. That's all bullshit. We know this now. And do we care about their health and their welfare and their safety? I think that's all been shit out the window over this pandemic in the past 2 years. Do we care about gobs of money? Yeah, obviously. It's been also, you know, you could look at the way they handled the tournaments, the women's tournaments, the golf at LSU that was canceled because the field wasn't playable and they didn't even get to play that round of the NCAA tournament.
Wow.
You know, the women's basketball stuff, the women's college World Series for softball stuff. This is all about money.
Of course.
And I guess it's always been, but a guy like me who I like the amateur, they play for the love of the game. I like that idea. I do. I love it.
I've got
it's time to pay him.
I do have a question for you in regards to amateurism or perceived amateurism. I'll use the example that you mentioned a few minutes ago, Lexi's son. If she, I mean, she's coming back, I believe, right, for another year.
Yes.
At Nebraska. So, which is fantastic news, everybody will be happy to see her and healthy, and you know, we'll go chase another championship. But under the NIL, if she were to make even $20, and I know it'd be significantly more than that because of Nebraska's rabid volleyball fan base, does that disqualify her from Olympic prospects? You know,
not that I know.
Well, because it wasn't. Well, and maybe, you know, since the Dream Team, you know, and even before that, but I always thought you had to have some type of amateur status in the Olympics, but I guess not.
No, I mean, if you look at the U.S., like the national team, who's on that? Jordan Larson. I should know these names.
But, I guess they
where I'm exhausted. Jordan Larson's been on that for a long time. Kelsey Robinson. Mm-hmm. These are young women that also play in professional leagues all over the world. So
good point. Well, John, you have had an answer for each one of my inquiries this evening, and I do appreciate you. Do you have any other rants that you want to disperse among the people this week? Maybe something about not blowing up servers?
You know, don't work on production servers and make changes when it's the middle of the day. Okay, just don't do that. Why do you do that? Why does anybody do that? I didn't say that. I'll probably get in trouble when somebody hears, what are you bragging on us for? Because you made a fucking change to the production server in the middle of the day and it blew up a whole department. God. Anyway.
Because you did something stupid.
I don't really have anything left. I mean, you know, you can tell that I'm exhausted because my language is... It's not the profanity. I did get an email from a person this week who was very disgusted with my profane mouth. And he apparently listened to – the email says that he listened to this on Facebook. And I don't understand. Maybe he clicked on the Facebook thing where Perhaps. It took it to the article and then he listened to it at Coronation. But he was very upset that I swore. He did the usual thing where he said, you know, people who swear aren't as smart as those people that don't, which is something you hear a lot of time all the time. If you're a person that swears a lot like me, I'm talking while I'm looking for this email.
I read the email
it's
as well.
Ironic. Here's what he said. It's ironic that the subject of the university's fan relations being classy was done using that disgusting choice of words. I have no idea what I said. I hate to see Mr. John Johnston have any connection to representing UNL considering the language he was using. Listen.
Point of order.
He wanted me to take this under consideration, and here's what I have to say. There's just a group, there's a part of the population who considers profanity part of the language. And you probably haven't noticed this because you wrote me this email. But there's a lot of younger people that just consider the F word part of language. They don't consider it profanity at all. It's in their culture. It's in their music. It's in their everyday life. It's in their everyday language and how they talk to each other. Fuck you, Tony, is the greatest meme on the internet. And it wouldn't be fuck you, Tony, if he said screw you, Tony, or fuck you, Tony, or up your ass, Tony. Fuck you, Tony, is specifically funny. Because it's two guys yelling fuck you at each other. And if that bothers you, I'm sorry. But there's just some of us who aren't going to treat Nebraska football like a religion. And the podcast should always be marked as explicit. And if you don't want to hear explicit language, don't listen to us. And I get the same emails from people that go, you don't swear enough. Why are you not swearing anymore?
Why'd you clean up your life, John?
I don't
we miss old John. Well, the good news is
my wife is peering through the door, giving me dirty looks for yelling, "Fuck you, Tony." You need to look up the "fuck you, Tony" meme. It's hilarious.
Hi, Mrs. Coronation. I hope you know how thankful we all are for you.
You can come in here and show your face.
No, we're not worthy.
Okay. All right.
I mean, neither are you.
I don't know anything else. That's all I got.
All right, John, what a way to end the show. Thanks for letting me come back. Thanks for amending our recording schedule so that I could be here for a little while and still have some quality time, some QT with my family. And we'll try it all again next week and see if the stars align, as it were. In the meantime, well, if you say one more swear word a day, that means I won't have to say that one swear word a day.
Shit balls.
Okay. That's one I don't have to say today. I've said a lot. That's just one I can mark off my list. John, thanks as always, buddy. Great to have you here. Great to have your insight. For our founder and fearless leader, John Johnston, I'm Greg Mahochko. This is the Five Heart Podcast, where we remind you this week and every week that Five Heart, and it works if you can only see all of it. There's Five Heart. Nope, that's two. Five Heart. It's all the heart you need, John.
Go Big Red!